702. News and current affairs.
14 minutes after 10 o'clock, Stembe Somsomi, editor of the Sunday Times, is my guest this evening. Stembe, so thank you so much for joining us this evening. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Opry. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm having a bit of a star-struck moment today. I've just had a conversation with Mzilika Ziwa Africa. Now I'm having a conversation with the Stembe Somsomi. You'll forgive me if there's a little bit of a tremor in my voice.
Much more famous than me.
indeed. These are exciting times for a lowly nighttime radio presenter like myself, Stembe. So thank you so much for joining me this evening. To imagine a country where the ANC does not play a prominent role in its governance, to imagine a South Africa where the ANC does not play a leading role in government at all tiers of government, is something that maybe a few years ago was an impossibility even to contemplate, but it appears, based on what you write and based on some of my observations and the conversations I have here, that it's perhaps time to start thinking about this.
Yes, I think so. I mean, the reason we need to start thinking about this is that if you actually look at South Africa, especially, let's say, you go back to when the NAT took over power as a single party, not in coalition. Was it 1948? They became a dominant political force from then up until, I would say, the mid-1980s, where the ANC then becomes the dominant political power, even when it was outside of government. But I think everyone was beginning to accept by 1986 that no future of South Africa could be imagined without imagining the ANC being involved in it, and that the ANC was going to play a greater role. And then for the last 8 years, the ANC led the country in the process of transition, led the negotiations, led us into a democratic state, through its policies, reshaped this country. And now we find ourselves in a situation we've never been before. Not only is the ANC looking like it's not going to be the dominant political force that it has been over the last 30 years, but it does not look like it is going to be a single political party that's going to play the role that was played by the ANC or the NAT before it.
And that reality of a country that is not governed by one big political party is one that we should look at with some trepidation, given the ructions we've seen recently in the coalition governments of the various local governments that we've seen that have not been very successful. We hope that in this version of the local government governance, after the last year's local government elections, that we'll see greater stability. But coalition governments have not had a good run in South Africa. What would this mean for South Africa's stability if that reality, a coalition sort of government, were to be where we are heading in the not too distant future? And I'm even looking at 2024.
Yes, I think something that I also didn't mention in the column myself was when we look at coalitions, I think we should go beyond the 2016 experience and what we are experiencing now.
Yeah,
I think if you remember that in the early years of our democracy, KZN and the Western Cape didn't have outright majorities.
Yes.
And therefore parties had to enter into coalitions, although there were problems even with those coalition governments. But I think the level of political maturity of leaders meant that there wasn't the kind of instability that we've seen in Kabeja, Tswane and Johannesburg during the last administrations in those cities. But
and Parliament over the last 2 days or last week, Thursday and Friday. Yeah,
Yes, I'm just saying that our experience as a people of coalition government has been mixed. There is an earlier version of the mid-1990s up until around 1999, and then you would have what we've witnessed in 2016 and what we are witnessing in Parliament, that the level of debate is degenerating, and it's becoming violent, when actually Parliament should be a place where people debate and persuade each other peacefully.
Sure.
So I think the point is, what we need to remember is that what is required are mature leaders to lead us through this difficult period we're about to enter.
I want to stay a little bit with the mystery of the coalition in South Africa. You point at two periods: the time when we just come out of apartheid, and the time where we seem to be coming out of an ANC-led government on all three tiers. What were the stakes that kept the sanity together that are no longer available now, do you think, Stembe? So you speak of it as a certain political maturity. What were the issues that had political parties and leaders mature at that time versus now?
I think then everybody wanted to ensure that South Africa works. We were very fragile coming from our history of apartheid. A lot of people are calling it now a miracle what we went through.
Mm.
But at the time, there was a lot of violence, for instance, in areas like KZN. There was uncertainty in the Western Cape of whether everyone was going to accept the outcome of the election. So as a result, we had the kind of leadership that was determined to see that this works, even though Party X may not be the dominant party in government, but they will try and ensure that it works and that government is successful. What we are finding now, it looks like the emphasis is only on who becomes, who remains in power, and who wants to stay in power by all means necessary. And people use all sorts of tactics, even if those threaten our stability as a country.
Are there no incentives at this moment to try and recapture that kind of maturity that you speak of? Is there no way that we can, at some level, try to find those incentives? Because my sense is that, and I think you allude to that in your article, that if we go the current route, the current coalition route, as seen in recent years, the political fissures are too deep. The issues are too polarized and polarizing for us to have the relative stability we saw in the 90s, and that we may go into a period of real instability, maybe even prolonged violence. Much of what we saw last year during July was a precursor to what might happen if we go down that coalition route.
I think there are incentives, although I think it is also dependent on leaders actually seeing that it is in their benefit to work towards having a more stable coalition government. And those who lose elections to accept that they would have lost the election, and to accept that they would be in opposition benches, and that they will need to learn to be good at being the opposition, because I think those have been the problems. But linked to that is a problem of what happens in political parties themselves, because the problem seems to me that what you see, especially with the dominant political party, the ANC, what is coming through as leadership, at least with all these conferences that have been happening this year, these are people who are not thinking through in terms of where this country is going. They are just thinking about survival, and not even the survival of them as a political party, but as a faction, in that particular city where the contest is being held, or province. So it's very much inward looking. They're not looking at, okay, what's happening to the country? Where is this country going? And then what role can we play to make sure that whatever transition is happening, there isn't instability?
Let's look at some current affairs that are taking place at the moment, and I'd be interested to hear how you interpret them, given the conversation that we're having now about whether or not the ANC will in fact be the governing party at the various tiers of governance in this country. President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the President of the Republic but also President of the ANC, is quite frankly under siege at the moment, given the Palapala issue. We've just heard that the Speaker of Parliament, Mapisa Ngakula, has refused to have an investigation take place into those issues by Parliament and the agencies that are available to Parliament. Somebody sent me a message in the first hour to say, no, Parliament should not be involved in the investigation because they're not the police. But SCOPA does investigations. Various committees in Parliament are available to make certain investigations at the level that is available to Parliament. The whole ethics issue is something that is within the ambit of Parliament's investigative, I suppose, powers, right? What do you make of the fact that the Speaker has refused the ATM and the UDM's call for an investigation into the President's issues as far as the robbery that took place at Palapala, which he has not denied?
Yeah, I think the Speaker is making the same mistake that the President is making, of taking a legalistic approach to this problem, to say, let's leave this with the police, let's leave this with the courts to decide. And as if the court of public opinion doesn't matter. The president has decided to follow that route. And maybe it's not surprising that the speaker, who comes from the same political party, then takes a similar position. But I think this was partly part of the problem that Jacob Zuma faced when he was president, where when they were supposed to deal with issues head-on, for instance, let's say in Uganda, when it first happened, they took a similar approach where they didn't open up on issues, and they said, no, the matters are being investigated by other institutions. And by the time the story blew into a major scandal, there was no real role to be played by Parliament. So I think this approach would probably lead us to the same situation we found ourselves with Nkandla, where Parliament gets accused of not playing its role of holding the president to account.
And I go back then to the issue you raise in your article to say that we may be moving into some unstable headwinds should the ANC lose the grip that it has on power at the moment. It's no longer inconceivable to think of the ANC going below 50%. In fact, if the if last year's local government elections are anything to go by, we're already there. I made the comment last week, I think it was Friday, to say that I feel as though the EFF is running out of ideas in the way that it continues to behave around this issue. I might agree with them as to the protest that the president needs to answer, but the way that they carry their protest out in Parliament for me is rather outdated and does not achieve the desired outcome for what they legitimately are crying out for. And it appears to me that the decision by the Speaker not to allow for investigation strengthens the position of the EFF to say that we are going to have more of the same as what we had during the Jacob Zuma administration, where the ANC plays politics with an issue that is fundamentally ethical and moral.
That's precisely the point about when I'm saying I think they're making a mistake here by taking the same approach that they took the last time, because it would lead to that kind of instability in the House, because the EFF and probably other parties as time goes on are going to question the legitimacy of the president if he's refusing to be held accountable by the House. But going back to that question about instability, so I think a lot of analysts have been saying before Palapala happened, or before we knew about Palapala, they had been saying that even if the ANC dips under 50%, it will still be big enough because of the Ramaphosa factor to be able to get another party or two other smaller parties to be able to form a government post-2024. Now, this was based on a belief that there is a Ramaphosa factor that pulls the ANC into closer to 50%. So the question now is whether the damage that is being done by Palapala would allow Ramaphosa to still be president, let's say, come December this year when the ANC holds its conference, or even beyond that, if he survives until 2024, will the electorate still, because he was elected on the ticket of anti-corruption,
yes,
was seen as not Zuma. So if there is a major scandal around him, would voters still come out to back him? So those are the questions that they are facing. And then related to that is that what then happens to the ANC that finds itself on the opposition benches? Will they accept, or will they try to be as disruptive as, let's say, the ANC in 2016 in Kabera, or the ANC in Johannesburg, and so on?
And what is your prognosis? Do you think that the ANC has a stomach for being in the opposition benches? I've had this conversation before, and an ANC individual called to say, no, but I mean, if you look at the Western Cape, we have towed the line, we've lost, and we've been in the opposition benches there. And yes, there have been issues in Qabega, in Tshwane, in Johannesburg, but generally we have taken up the position as opposition party, and we've towed the line.
I agree that the experience is mixed, but I think it depends on which grouping within the ANC. There are people who seem to not regard democracy as the most important principle in politics, who regard the party as more important, who do seem to think that if they are not in power, no one should have peace, no one should be in power. And there have been instances, for instance, the ANC, not only just in the Western Cape, but when the ANC was in opposition in KZN in the mid-1990s, I think it played a very good role as an opposition party holding government to account there. And they were not obstructive, they were not disruptive. They were working within the systems, following the rules. Those experiences need to come through now if this happens at a national level. But my fear is that when you look at what happens sometimes in ANC conferences where people do not want to accept outcomes in internal party conferences, you just wonder what if most of those people end up being backbenchers in parliament, will they easily accept whatever the outcome of the election would be? So I think it's also dependent on the kind of leadership that then the party produces in December.
Mm-hmm.
I like what I heard from, for instance, from the Premier of Gauteng. I think he was addressing the Urubleni ANC regional conference. I may be wrong, but I think it was the Urubleni, where he was saying that the party now needed the kind of cadres who can be on the opposition benches and actively play their role there. Whether that attitude is something that other leaders believe in, I'm not sure.
Well, join us in this conversation, 011-883-0702. Are you ready for a South African government without the ANC leading it? Have you thought about the implications, the ramifications thereof? Give me a call. I'd love to take your calls on that, 011-883-0702. What needs to happen now by way of preparation for that reality, should it in fact arise? I saw a tweet earlier on today, Stembiso, from the federal chairperson of the DA, Helen Ziller, suggesting that at some level they did entertain the prospect of talking to certain ANC individuals or factions. But she said something to the effect that she now realizes that the whole of the ANC is, I think she calls it the African National Criminals, and not just a matter of certain individuals, suggesting that there was a thought, at least in the DA, of a possibility of some sort of coalition, some sort of alliance, some sort of, I don't know, working together to nader and kind of situation with the ANC, and it appears that it's not going to happen now, at least according to Helen Ziller. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I think that is another one of the ANC's biggest headaches following the next elections, that they are running out of people who still believe that there is some good in the ANC. There are people that they can still work with. We saw this with the last elections, where the ANC assumed that in municipalities like Ekurhuleni and elsewhere, they could still find other political parties to work with. And everyone in the opposition seemed to be running away from them, seemed to be looking for anyone else to work with but the ANC. I mean, that perception that the corruption is not just a Zuma problem, as some people used to diagnose as in the past, or a problem of this one faction or the other, that it is a problem of the political party. That is a perception that has become very entrenched in society. And it's not just Helen Ziller or DA associated people. ANC members themselves are saying this. And that is the problem that the party is facing. The moral high ground that the ANC has held for most of the party of the past 8 years in this country has evaporated.
I want to take you back at least, let's say, 35 years ago, when the Nats at the time were the dominant party in South African politics. They were the incumbents. They had their hands on the levers of the state coffers. They had state resources on their side. Even though perhaps their popularity was waning and so forth, people were becoming a lot more pragmatic about some of their policies and so forth, given the rising realities of a more democratic South Africa. The prospects of a democratic South Africa were becoming a real force to be reckoned with. The international world was putting pressure. In South Africa, there was all sorts of violence and so forth. At the time, you remember, people were saying that it is inevitable. It is inevitable that the National Party government must fall, because the issues, the things that kept it alive, were no longer sexy. They were no longer the things that people would support them for. What is it that the ANC faces, just in terms of policy, in terms of the issues that the ANC has been associated with, that may be the reason why the ANC must fall? What is the cause for the ANC's irrelevance in South Africa's future politics?
In my view, I think the...
Is that a fair parallel to make?
Yes and no. No, okay. Because, I mean, the system of apartheid was just unjust and needed to collapse no matter what the National Party were doing. The ANC has been a legitimate government, but their conduct in government has led to people calling to question their leadership. But I think the fundamental problems, though, has been that, okay, fine, it does happen that a party that has been in power for that long, that people become tired of having the same political party, so they turn against it. So we've seen it in a lot of other countries before. But I think what has contributed to the problem now is that we had the transition, and all of us are grateful of that. We've had democracy, and there's been policies to try and reverse the effects of apartheid. But the key, the basic things like the delivery of services have been getting worse with every year that passes. The policies seem to not be reacting to the problems that we face now. The economy is not delivering in terms of jobs. It's not growing at the pace that we would like to see it growing. It's definitely not doing anything to do away with our apartheid past. It remains the same as an economy that was dominated by a minority and the majority has limited access. So all of that leads to questions about the political leadership that we have, whether it has a vision for taking this country forward. So when you look at other countries who have gone through transition during the period that we've been going through transition, when you say South Africa was seen by most as a country that was leading in terms of transforming itself into a better society, and somehow around 2008-2010 it all stopped, and we got too embroiled in internal ANC politics, too embroiled in corruption scandals, that we haven't really moved that much, and people are looking for change. And the party that has always said we are the leader of society, as it used to call itself, seems to have no answers to all the problems that we encounter today. And increasingly, citizens are finding that they have to look for solutions elsewhere. Many decided to check out and decided to use their own money to pay for services and get services in the private sector. But the vast majority does not have that option. So the option is to look at what we do in government.
So whereas the Nets were illegitimate morally and ethically, the experience of South Africans seems to be similar to those of apartheid South Africa, not because of the illegitimacy of the ANC's ANC politically, but because of a lack of performance. In other words, the illegitimacy of the ANC arises out of its lack of governance and performance at that level rather than its legitimacy politically speaking. Would you say that the illegitimacy that the ANC is feeling because of its conduct, as you say, is at the same level, not the same reason, but at the same level experientially to what people were experiencing under the Nets?
I wouldn't say at the same level, but I think it is at a level that should be uncomfortable for the ANC. But I wouldn't say it is exactly at the same level, because I wouldn't think that, for instance, if we were to have elections tomorrow, that the ANC will get less than 20%, which is what the Nets did, I think, in 1994.
Yeah. Give us a call. 011-883-0702. Stembe Somsomi is my guest. What should we be thinking about if the probability, the possibility of the ANC losing a grip on power becomes a reality? How should we be managing that process? Is it something that we should be thinking about now, or is it something that we wake up to the day after the elections when we discover that the reality is that the ANC no longer has power? What are the possible ructions that may ensue? And how do we manage them? How do we act procreatively? How can we act in a way that anticipates those things, in a way that is going to make sure that we are not in in trouble when that day arises? Are the leaders that we have ready for that? Are we as society ready for that? Or is our conversation simply about the experience, the negative experience that we have as a result of the conduct that Stembiso is talking about of the ANC? What can we start to do as society to prepare ourselves for that reality? Stembiso, what can we do? Should we be doing something? Start for me with society, with you and I as citizens.
Well, I think for citizens and for me, it would be not checking out and continuing to participate in the democratic process. It worried me that in the last election, the voter turnout was so low. People need to participate in conversations that are happening about where the country is going, where it ought to go, and what our priorities should be. And then when election time comes, people think through in terms of which political parties or individuals, if the system does change, to vote for and for what reason. I think the questions that we probably would be having in the next election are different from the questions that we've had in past elections where it's implemented. It's more about where do we go from here as a country and society. And I think those are parts of the conversation. But those who are involved in political parties also need to start thinking about what sort of coalition governments do they want to whom, and should they be having those conversations now rather than waiting for outcomes first and then start having horse trading? Because that's your on its own leads to instability sometimes. So they don't need to form a formal coalition before elections, but they can discuss a set of principles and say, this is what we stand for, and we would work with parties who stand for X, Y, and Z. And then when the outcome comes, it's much clearer.
Never before in South Africa's political landscape have we seen so many different formations, right? Political formations, each of them with their various factions within those formations, with their own ulterior motives. Never before have we seen this kind of thing happen.
True.
And you made a very interesting point to say that even within those factions, it's not about a collective desire to see, a particular party do well collectively. It's about narrow, almost individual issues that are driving the actions and the sponsorships of certain actions in various parts of the country. Do we have the leadership? Do we have the incentives? Do we have the language at this moment to bring about that kind of unity? And where would we see it? Where would that unity come from?
As an optimist, I will say there should be enough leaders out there in society who can lead that process. The problem is if they are crowded out by those with wrong intentions. Because I think part of the problem here has been that as the economy slowed down, as opportunities evaporated in the private sector, a whole lot of people in the middle class have seen politics the same way that some people are now seeing churches as ways of making a quick buck, as a way of if you can just make sure that you have 50,000 followers, then you know that you probably are guaranteed to make it to parliament or to a provincial legislature. And so that is our biggest challenge. We also, in terms of reforming the system, the electoral system, we also have to look at whether, I know that democracy requires that everyone has a right to vote and be voted for, but should political parties internally come up with a criteria of who they would like to see getting into public office? So it's not just everyone who is a member who professes to stand by the principles of the political party, but they should be coming with certain skills that will help contribute to building the country.
I'm going to look at a number of political blocks as I see them at the moment. So you've got the emergence of the new parties, such as Mr. Herman Mashaba's party. We're going to gain that party now.
Action SA,
right? Yeah. Together with an organization such as the Patriotic Alliance under Gayton McKenzie, who seemed to be really moved politically by the immigration crisis that we are facing in this country. It appears that that is the big rhetoric. Of course, they'll also talk about issues of service delivery and so forth, and that ideologically, perhaps, for Action SA, the DA is closer to them. But of course, maybe somebody might argue that there are certain factions, at least the Ramaphosa CR17 faction is closer just in terms of ideological approach to politics to those people. Then, of course, there is the other bloc that is made up of the RET faction that is closer ideologically perhaps to the EFF, for example, and many other smaller formations that are aligned to that kind of ideological thinking in South Africa. And then there is the big middle of the smaller, very much smaller parties that have maybe more narrower issues attached to their politics. Where does this thing go? And what are the issues that are going to drive whatever political blocks that are going to exist post-2024?
So I used to have this theory that it's most likely to be what you call the Ramaphosa faction in the ANC working closer with the DA.
Yeah.
If the ANC gets under 50%. That is increasingly looking unlikely.
Yes.
Especially in my opinion with what has happened with
Palapala. Yep.
And I'm sure that the president will survive that. And if he survives that, will get the one to associate itself with him. There is another problem for me is that I don't think the factions in the ANC are clearly RET versus Ramaphosa. And I think there are too many other groupings that are emerging that maybe we have not been able to define. But let's say the so-called RET grouping becomes dominant. Yes, it's most likely to lean towards the EFF. But will the EFF be amenable? I am not sure about that because from my reading of the EFF, it seems to me that the EFF is not interested in assisting the ANC in any way in terms of staying in government. They want to deepen the crisis. Every time the ANC struggles to win an election, the EFF may say they are willing to talk to them, but I think in the end they deepen the crisis by just walking away so that the ANC is out of government. I think they think an ANC that is out of government would lead to the demise of the ANC as a political party quicker, which would probably be a gain to the EFF. That's my take of their approach.
And as you look at, my apologies, as you look at the politics of this country, which way do you think it'll lead? Look into your crystal balls, Thembi. So where do you think we go?
My take is that what we see, that the political parties that generally form governments in cities where the ANC has not been able to gain a majority, I think, depending on how well they do it at the next election. So you would probably see a DA, Patriotic Alliance, and maybe Action SA, and other smaller political parties trying to form a coalition government post 2024. Unless the ANC is at 46, 48%, then maybe to persuade the smaller parties to to assist it to remain in government.
What do you think the issues will be? I mean, what will the dominating issues will be? I see the issue, at least for the Patriotic Alliance, CSA sort of grouping, being the immigration crisis. What will the issues be? And of course, following that will be the issues of service delivery, jobs and so forth. But what would the issues be? Will they still be identity politics, black and white? What will the issues be, do you think, that'll carry the conversation, the political conversation in South Africa going forward?
Okay, for opposition parties, in my view, the main one would be just trying to keep the ANC out of power. I think that would be the first main issue that that appeals to all those who've been talking about forming a coalition government. But yes, the same issues that we have, whether it is issues around immigration, issues around crime, identity politics, all of these issues would be there, especially ahead of elections. But I think political parties in South Africa have come to a point where people believe that if I distinguish myself by having a clear message on this particular subject, I will get the constituency that I want. So they will make those issues the major issues going to elections. But I don't think there will be a big remaining factors when it comes to who they go to bed with after election day.
Talk to me about the private sector and what you believe its role will be. The private sector is large. They are the corporates. But then, of course, there's also the civil society. What role do you think it will play in the chartering of a new course for South Africa should we see an ANC drop under 50%?
I think for the private sector, the private sector likes to have certainty, and this period must be very uncomfortable for them, where they do not know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I would think that the larger organization would be trying to talk to all the major political parties just to see where the tide is going generally throughout the country. Smaller business is going to be, or probably even hold back on new investments, waiting to see what happens after the elections, especially because we've also had this experience that we had last year in July with the riots. So there would be apprehensive not knowing what's going to happen next. The braver ones would probably be funding political parties, trying to help with whatever political party they think has an ideology that supports their case in what they do in business. But I think, in my view, most of business will just be worried about what happens going forward. When it comes to the civil society, I think the important thing for civil society in this period is just to be vigilant and to be active, to be vigilant in terms of ensuring that we have a credible process towards and after the elections, because when the elections are highly contested, a lot of things go wrong. A lot of people try to do things to put themselves in an advantage over others, sometimes in an unfair manner. So civil society will need to be active in those spaces to make sure that the IEC does what it's supposed to do, that everyone is supposed to be delivering the election is protected so that they are not pressured by any of the political parties.
Will President Cyril Ramaphosa survive this specific moment in his political career, do you think?
I do not know. If I knew, I'd be very rich.
Yeah.
Everyone is asking this question. I do not know. I think with every week that goes by without him answering the most obvious of the questions, the more people get worried.
Yeah.
But I do not know where this investigation is going to go and what the outcome would be. Because also, wall that we have right now is an affidavit by Arthur Fraser. We don't have more than that.
Is D.D. Mabuza the man that can take us to the next phase?
Well, if the president goes now, D.D. Mabuza probably is going to be the next president. But if the president, let's say, gets defeated in December, whoever wins that election will probably be the next president.
Stembiso Msomi is the editor of the Sunday Times. Thank you so much for joining us. The article that we were referring to is It's No Joke, or that's the title. It's No Joke. We need to imagine South Africa without the ANC. Thank you so much, my brother, for your time. I really appreciate it.